Hey fam, welcome to the Myths That Make Us podcast. I was actually about to say the Metal Programming podcast. That is the old podcast that has now been sealed and put into a sarcophagus and is sitting somewhere. Actually, no, it's just still on iTunes, so you can go check it out if you want. But today we have on Christine, and she is a yogi. And she's one of the head wolves at the, I guess, one of the head swans at Black Swan Yoga. You know, the Black Swan is like a hydra swan. It's got many heads. And this is one of those podcasts where, like, the very last moment, it kind of all came together and it clicked and there were tears and it was beautiful. And it's why I do the podcast. It was amazing, and these type of episodes can't happen unless the guests are just open and willing to be vulnerable and raw, and she was, and it was great. And anyone listening who is interested in, you know, these Jungian ideas, there's a lot of good books for men about the Jungian psychology. The main one that I would recommend would be King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. I don't know of as many for females, but the best one that I keep hearing recommended came up on this podcast, and I would like to offer it to anyone here who wants to go deeper, especially into the female psyche about, you know, these archetypes. And the name of the book is The Women Who Run with Wolves, or it might be The Woman Who Run with Wolves. And every woman that I know in my life who is reading that book cannot stop talking about how powerful it is. So if these questions interest you and, you know, the kind of angle of this podcast, I would recommend that book to you. Also, a thing that I'm going to be trying to integrate more into these episodes or between episodes is going to be dream interpretation episodes where I interpret a fan or a listener's dreams and kind of start to give everyone an understanding of how you can begin to use your dreams almost like a daily compass, because that's what I think dreams are doing, is that there's a part of your psyche that is watching your life that doesn't speak with words but will talk to you through your dreams, and it's really fucking smart. I think it's the byproduct of millions of years of evolution. And it's watching your life and it wants to help you. And I think the way that you can get that help is, or one way that you can do that is to pay attention to your dreams. And so it's going to be an ongoing in-between style episodes where I'm going to interpret people's dreams. If you're interested in, you know, me reaching out to you and doing that with you, just leave the crystal ball icon in a review with your IG handle in iTunes, and then I will eventually reach out. You know, you guys can already see that there's starting to become a backlog. So just know that patience is a virtue and I will get to you eventually. I promise. As always, I genuinely appreciate each of you for giving your time and your attention to these episodes. You know, there's just so much going on in the world that I'm honored that you are giving an hour or so to this type of stuff. I love you. Thank you for listening. And namaste. Christine, welcome to the Myths That Make Us podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure. I'm excited.
I see you around the office all the time, and I knew that I needed to get you on because there are people that have different vibes, and yours is just potent, and, you know, potent people need to be recorded, you know?
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here.
So the first question that I like to ask people is, if I met you right after you did something that really kind of puts you in your true state, and mm-hmm. so for you, that's probably like right after yoga, mm-hmm. and I asked you, who are you, and what do you do? Because I know that that's a question that gets asked a lot in this culture, but just so people at home kind of get a sense of who you are, how would you describe who you are and what you do?
Who I am beyond the surface?
I'll get to that, but just imagine that I'm not woke as fuck.
Okay.
And I just asked you, like, who are you?
Okay,
What do you do?
Cool.
What would you say?
So I work with Black Swan Yoga, and I am one of the lead teacher trainers with Black Swan. So I teach people how to teach yoga. And more than that, I think it's about helping people to claim their own power and find their own voice. And I think that's why I love what I do, is because I don't, if they teach, that's awesome, but it's about finding that inner potential that they have within themselves. And so that's my main field of work. And then we have a podcast, I film some video content, and right around the corner, I will be moving to Denver to open Black Swan Yoga out in Denver.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a little baby coming around. And yeah, that's kind of my life. I love movement. If I'm not at the gym, I'm doing yoga or running or climbing. And
yeah, I see you on Instagram. I'm like, fuck, I'm lazy as shit.
No, I don't want you to think like that.
It's my truth and I have to own it.
Okay, fair enough. So that's me in a nutshell. And I love connecting and getting deep with people.
How would your best friend describe who you are and what you do?
Oh, man. Well, I think one of my best friends is one of my business partner. And she would explain me or describe me as someone a little quirky, but really focused, and will get shit done when I need to get shit done. Energetic, warm, loving. Yeah.
How would your most
fiery
recent...
Fiery, too.
There we go.
Yeah.
The truth starts to come out. How would your most recent romantic partner describe who you are and what you do?
Oh, and what I do, who I am and what I do?
Yeah.
I would say vibrant and like directed attention of what I do. Not wavering and kind of fiery.
Fiery, there we go.
There we go again,
cool.
Yeah.
What is the first memory that you have of your life?
I think about that. My first memory, it sounds really silly, but do you remember those like little platforms you would sit on? They're really tiny and you would kind of get in this like little squat and you'd spin it.
Yeah.
And you just spin around.
Right.
That's my first memory. And I must have been like 2 or 3.
What is the emotion that you have attached to that memory? Like when you think of it?
I think, oh man, it's such fun, liberating.
Yeah.
Just taking me out of like my own perspective, out of that own moment almost, like it, just because of the spinning.
Yeah.
I think that was why I remember it so powerfully.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What's the first story that you remember being in love with? Because if you've ever watched children or babysat children,
yes,
they find a book,
yeah,
or they find a movie and they watch it over and over, or ask you to read it over and over. What's the first one that you remember?
Man, good question.
First, that's why we're here.
Yeah, let's see. My first book or movie. I know my sister's was Mary Poppins, but that's not mine.
Right.
Which is weird that I remember hers. And I also know that she loved Peter Pan, and I would watch those because she was a few years older than me.
And she got to the VCR first?
I guess so. And I just kind of followed suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, books. Dr. Seuss was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing particular. I don't really remember. I really don't remember.
That's okay. Is there a Disney movie that you remember as a kid really resonating with?
I really liked Aladdin.
Beautiful, good.
So, I was like, give me a magic carpet. I want a fucking genie. This sounds like a little monkey. Like, I'm done. This is good. Yeah, Aladdin was it.
So if you had to, well, I guess what's interesting is the way that you just described that. Did you identify more with Aladdin or with Jasmine?
No, I liked not even, maybe Aladdin a little bit. He was kind of like the street rat, just kind of like jumping around, being adventurous, and that's like totally who I am. But with Jasmine, I loved her relationship with her tiger, and like I embodied tiger now.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that I'm thinking about that.
And what's cool is you're already starting to do what the next part of this podcast is about, so you just know what's going on. But if you were babysitting somebody, mm-hmm, or it was a nephew or a niece or even your own child, and let's say that they're an intelligent 10-year-old, and you were going to tell them the story of Aladdin as you know it,
mm-hmm,
and you spent like 2 or 3 minutes telling that story.
Yeah.
Imagine they're here now. How would you tell that story?
Well, there was this street rat, and he just kind of explored and stole fruit when he can, not out of malice, but just to take care of himself, to survive. And he was just constantly on adventures and stumbles upon this beautiful princess. And they end up connecting and going on this amazing adventure with a genie who comes into the picture and her magic carpet. And I really don't honestly remember the whole story, which is weird.
Yeah.
They get in some, you know, there's the ominous character who causes them trouble, but they, you know, love power overwins or wins and defeats the evil. But yeah, I don't even really can't even like fully remember it. I mean,
yeah, what's beautiful about asking the question this way is, so we process our experience by turning them into stories, and we turn them into stories that basically become like tools that we use to get through life. And we remember the gist of the story as it pertains in usefulness to us. And so the details of stories evaporate. And when you have to tell a story to a smart child, you it almost forces you to gist it down to the core elements.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
Right. And and you know, so what's interesting is that whenever I ask this question, and you already started to do this without me even prompting, is that it seems to set the core contours of our ego story. Like the story that we identify as, this is who I am in the world.
Yeah.
And so in your early life, did you feel like you had to scrap for what you got and you had to work hard and you weren't really given the fruits of life?
No, actually not.
Well, then let's stop the podcast right now. It's over. This doesn't work.
I mean, like, no, I was very much, you know, I was raised like suburban Protestant type of family. Everything was basically taken care of for me. You know, I was really nurtured well.
I want to reflect something back at you. When you were thinking, right before you said everything was given to me, I saw anger and resentment on your face.
Interesting. I think I'm really grateful. I was, you know, I think maybe it's more me processing when I was in my early 20s. That was a really hard time. When I was teaching in a high school. Anger and resentment.
So a interesting thing for everyone who's listening to this is there is a psychologist who studies people who are married. And he'll have them argue, and then behind a mirror, there's a camera and records their facial expressions. And the number one facial expression that predicts whether or not they will get divorced in the next 5 years is where one side of the skin around the nose comes up.
Interesting.
And that's kind of the universal sign for resentment. And so if you're arguing with someone and you're in a relationship with them, look for that micro expression, because it's highly correlated with divorce. But that's what I felt I saw when you were talking about everything was given to me as a kid. Or as
maybe
child.
It's, it was, everything was really given to me as a kid. I think it's maybe a little bit of like, everything was given to me. You know what I mean? Like it was kind of easy.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, I recently actually did split up with my partner. So.
Well, we can for sure get into
that. Yeah, we can get into that too.
Who are the first three people in your early life, either fictional or real, that you admired? So it sounds like one was Aladdin.
Yeah. Definitely my mom. Super hardworking. I still look up to her. She's a saint. And my sister, my closest in age, older sister. We're still super close. She's 4 years older. And we were just like attached at the hip. It was like, hey, let me hang out with your friends because that's just easier for mom, you know?
If you had to articulate the one quality about each of them that you most admired, what would they be?
I would say my mom, hardworking, and my sister, just the ability to connect and have companionship. Mm. Yeah.
And then Aladdin?
Oh, his ability to just go with the flow. Like.
And you also mentioned that you admired Jasmine's relationship with her tiger.
Yeah, she's just badass.
For sure.
So that, like, that fierceness.
Yeah.
Lack of fear and her willingness to just kind of like abandon. That's interesting. You know, I was given everything. It was kind of like, I mean, I wasn't like a princess or anything, but treated that way. I was the youngest and just her ability to be like, well, fuck it. I'm going to go and hang out with this street rat.
Right.
Yeah. Just have an adventure.
What's interesting is, well, so that begs an interesting question. Is that a pattern that you see in the type of men that you date?
And what's, can you be more specific? Like,
That in some way they're not as quote unquote well off as you were, but you go on adventures with them. Like the tandem.
No.
All right. Well,
but I do look for the adventure.
Everything I thought was right is wrong. We're going to have to stop. No.
I definitely look for the adventure.
Yeah.
At the same time, in that same line of thought, I'm not like a cookie cutter. I don't look for the cookie cutter type of person. I don't gravitate to that.
For sure.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is our primary way of learning as children is we imitate.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that we imitate are people that, like, this is a hypothesis, but it's almost like we are looking for examples of ways of being in the world that we could see would be adaptive to us to help us get the type of life that we want.
Mm-hmm.
And we unconsciously admire people that embody aspects of being that if we imitated, we would be successful.
Yeah.
And all four of the things that you admired, we talked about earlier, they're qualities that you embody now.
Yeah, interesting.
This is a harder question and people tend to have a lot of resistance around this because I think it's the way the ego works, but who are the 2 to 3 people, fictional or real, that you actively disliked?
When I was young?
Yeah.
Who? Actively disliked.
Or there was some type of aversion to.
To them? You know, I guess I would say, I mean, not to dislike, but aversion a little bit towards my father. We're close now. But he commuted to Chicago and was gone all day long and would come home late. So it was just a lot of the times it was me, my mom and sisters. I get, you know, and just wanting him to be around more. Yeah.
Is there a character from any movie or book that you remember as a kid who was like a villain that like most stood out in your mind?
You know, because I watched Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my sister. I mean, I love the movie, but Captain Hook. Yeah.
So if you had to identify the quality, and you kind of touched on this about your dad, but the main quality in your dad and the main quality in Captain Hook that you did not like, what would those be?
Ooh. Well, for Hook, I feel like he really stole experience from people. And kind of box them in.
Yeah.
And then I think quality of my dad, just the lack of maybe awareness of other people's needs.
Yeah. And so what's interesting is I think that these represent the aspects of our personal shadow that we're most vigilant of not coming out. Does that resonate?
Those would be my shadow qualities.
Yeah, some aspects of your shadow that you're most aware of not allowing to come out. You know, because you don't want
for
them
myself
to.
Or for right. Oh, like I do not like being boxed in.
Right, and you don't want to be someone who boxes in others.
And I don't want to box people in either. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess with, you know. I want to be aware of my own needs. I think it's really important to be honest with yourself. And at the same time, I think that's something I've been working on is I have standards for how I live my life and not to place those on other people. I've learned that from my past So definitely, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So an interesting thing is that kind of sets the groundwork for the type of character that we were playing mm-hmm. as a child. And then what does a character need? A character mm-hmm. needs an adventure. Mm-hmm. And in order to have an adventure, you have to have a dream mm-hmm. of like where you want to go. As a child, do you remember, and this may have come online, quote unquote, like in early adolescence, but what was the first dream that you had about who you wanted to become? Like for me, mm-hmm. I wanted to be in the NBA.
Really?
And yeah, and that was my first kind of quote unquote dream that I began to work really hard uh-huh. towards. What was your first one?
I wanted to be a gorilla conservationist.
Can you explain what that is?
Like Jane Goodall. Like I wanted to just go and like
interesting.
Hang out with the gorillas.
Yeah. No.
I love animals.
Yeah. So what sparked that to be your first dream?
I think it was just school, actually. I believe that we just had to do different projects on animals and like study them. And I was just,
What grade was this?
Elementary, maybe second, third. I don't quite remember. Maybe fourth. It's all mixed together.
For sure.
Maybe it was younger. And then I just remember having like, I think my mom just getting me books on like animals, reptile. I was just like really interested and fascinated with creatures and yeah. life and the variety of life. Yeah.
What did you do to begin working towards that dream? Like for me, I became completely obsessed and I would play basketball like uh-huh. 4 or 5 hours a day.
Yeah. I didn't really pursue that dream.
Interesting.
I was just like infatuated right. with yeah, it. Yeah, and yeah. I was like this idea of like, ooh, I can go and do this. Actually, in high school, I did a report on the Peace Corps. And that was a thing I was going to do. I was going to go and do the Peace Corps. So that was, I feel like there was some connection for sure. to that.
And I think to try to get at where I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
What's the first thing that you got good at uh-huh. as a child or a young adult, like yeah. in your teenage years, that gave you a sense of, oh, I'm above average at this thing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I think that anyone who goes on to do anything at some point in their early life
yeah.
found something that kind of showed them, oh, whoa, I'm clearly above average at this.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives a sense of competence.
Yeah.
What was your first thing that yeah. kind of woke that up in you?
You know, I did really well all through school. It was like pretty easy for me. But I think actually it's not a specific like subject matter or sport. My parents put me in like every single sport you can imagine growing mm-hmm. up. I was very active.
Not surprised.
And then I also did a lot of art. So I went to school for art. I excelled at those things. But if I really think about it, even from a really young age, I was just super personable. And I just loved talking to people and connecting.
Yeah.
And I think that's a weird thing to acknowledge, but it just came easy to me. And it still comes easy. And now I'm like, oh, that makes sense to the career path that I have.
I see.
Yeah.
So in early high school, you wanted to join the Peace Corps.
Mm-hmm.
What actions did you start to take to try to make that dream real?
I studied about it. I wrote reports about it. I gave speeches about it. And then my cousin's wife went to the Peace Corps. So I just started picking her brain. And you know, I'm like, why didn't I end up going? I think my parents were like, you need to do something where you're going to like get a return on your investment.
Right.
So that was like, yeah. you need to go to college.
So a really interesting thing in our early life that I find is that we have something that we see as our dream mm-hmm. about where we want to go. And for most of us, that dream dies
mm-hmm.
at some point.
Yeah.
Like the world punches you in the mouth in such a way where you're like, oh, I was naive.
Yeah.
And then there's this transformational period where you have to basically reorganize the story about what you tell to yourself about who you are. And so some people have an acute moment of yeah. that where it's like, this is my I'm on the bathroom floor yeah. crying moment. But then some people kind of seamlessly transform from one story to the next. I'm trying to find, did you have an acute moment where it was like, oh, the human I thought I was is not accurate, and I had to rebuild that story?
Yeah, definitely. I would say starting in like eighth grade through high school, I just got swept up into drinking and drugs. I was sent to the hospital twice.
What happened?
Drinking too much and was shipped off to the hospital. And then the second time I was in the hospital, they were like, she's been here twice. She should go to an outpatient rehab. So I went to outpatient rehab. But
what age?
I was 15, 16. And
in hindsight, why do you think you were drinking that hard that early?
I was always, since, you know, I was young, I was always around older siblings and siblings' friends. And I just didn't know. I just got like, I had no idea. I was always small and I just tried to keep up, and then I just got wasted.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone else was doing. You know, I didn't have that awareness. And so then I was sent to an outpatient rehab, but at that place, everyone was like, didn't really want to be there. They were all around my age or older, and they were just like smoking and doing other drugs. And I was like, great, I'll stop drinking and I'll just start doing all these other drugs. And then
what other drugs were they?
I was just smoking pot and getting into some pills, and I was, you know, partying with like mushrooms and things like this. And I wasn't going like off the wall, you know, but I just definitely became more, I just didn't care anymore. I was like, I don't really care about school. I don't really care about the sports I'm doing. I just had that overall attitude. I was just like so self-absorbed. And then one day in high school, I was stoned in my jewelry class, and my parents or my dean came and got me and was like, grab your things, we're going to the office. And I'm like, cool, I'm stoned. And we go, and he was like, your parents are really concerned. The officer at the school is really concerned. And your parents are here, and they're gonna take you away to rehab, like away. And I was I was like shocked. So they sent me away. I was gone for 40 days, and I find that really profound. That being there really was my like wake up call. I was surrounded by like heroin addicts and crackheads, and I'm just like, what am I doing? And it just, there was a moment there was a lot of, you know, group kind of conversation, one-on-one conversation. There was a pastor of some kind that was, or minister, but didn't talk about like any religions. He just talked about like Aristotle and Socrates, and really got my brain like thinking about life and like, oh, there's so much more to what I was doing. So I would say all those dreams I had washed away because I got so caught up in just like the party life. And then being there was just this huge like wake up call, hitting rock bottom and being like, whoa, here I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What became the new goal for you when you emerged after those 40 days?
Yeah. I had a literal coming to Jesus in those 40 days. I totally like, and good behavior, they were like, you can go to church with us. And I was like, well, I'll leave this place. I'll go with you guys. And it was just like overwhelming. It was kind of like a mega church. And I had a very like real experience. And so.
So this is interesting.
Yeah.
Subjectively, how would you describe that experience that you had?
Ooh, it was like.
First, where were you?
I was in a church.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, what's happening? And then I just opened up my posture, like every, you know, like
was
my,
it during a song? Was it during?
Yeah,
a
I think
sermon?
It was during a song.
Yeah.
I don't know the song or anything. I just, my eyes were closed and I just felt like light everywhere, and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, just like what was happening, you know, and you know, I left the facility, and I knew, I feel like this inner wisdom was like, you really can't go back to, it was my senior year. You really shouldn't go back to your high school. And so I luckily had enough credits. I got to graduate early, and then I started college early. And I just, at that point in time when I came back, my biggest takeaway was like, you can't hang out with those people anymore. And I never have since.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, you know, over 10 years ago.
Since that experience in the church, what was your goal of what you wanted to do in college?
Yeah. And so I actually, this is amazing. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And my sister was like, you should go to school in Chicago. And so I went to school in Chicago. I went to school for art. And this was, it got really interesting because I still had that residue of like that party lifestyle. And then I had this like new, like real kind of Christ consciousness happening. And it was just like this kind of messy, not very like one-sided. It was like a blend of both worlds. And so I didn't really know. I really didn't have a goal. I just felt different inside.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be around people who thought more critically about life and weren't just getting fucked up just to get fucked up. And I went to art school because I liked art, but I didn't, it was just kind of like, here, you should go do this. You're kind of good at it.
Right.
So it was still like formulating everything. I didn't really have a clear vision at this point of where I was headed. I just kind of went with the flow.
At what point do you feel like that changed?
And then, yeah. Well, there's a lot. I got, you know, I was around really a lot of liberal artists, and I really wanted to be like a studio artist.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to be like, I wanted to make it as an artist. I wanted to like move to New York and just.
Specifically, what type of art?
I liked painting, but I got really into, one of my professors was this an amazing, intelligent, like emotionally, I was like crushing on this human being because I was like, whoa, you are incredible. And I got really into installation work and making pieces that were kind of politically driven of the current times, not one-sided, but just, I was really interested in like the Arab Spring in like 2010.
Yeah.
And I was making work with that. I had this roommate who was from Saudi Arabia that lived with me and just like picking her brain about, culture and religion. So I didn't, you know, in that sense, I really was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make art. And, but then again, my parents were like, you know, like you should do something where you might make more money.
Now, being honest, whenever you talk about your parents stepping in and saying that, your eyes kind of deaden.
I look back on it and I think there's no mistakes because I honestly am so grateful in those moments. I think I'm reliving that we're soul crushing, you know, like, oh, really? Yeah. Oh, really? You know, like, and that comes from that lack, like, I don't like to be boxed in. And now that I'm like in myself and my own human power, I'm like, no one can tell me no. Like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do when I feel it. But I'm really grateful because I know if I didn't go to the path that I went on, it would have taken me somewhere else, which could be amazing. But I'm so indebted to like where I am now. Like, people are like, were you upset that your parents took you out of your last year of high school and sent you away? And I'm like, hell no. I'm so grateful. I'm so glad that they had the willpower to intervene in my life. Like, you know, I was gave them so many heart attacks of the life I was living, you know?
Yeah.
But in those moments, you know, it was like, oh, sure. You know?
Yeah.
So I still didn't know. And even in college, I was like, I'm not sure. I'm just kind of going with whatever feels right.
Yeah.
You know?
So once you graduated, what did you go do?
Well, actually, it gets a little more complicated because in college I got-
Wait, life gets complicated?
A little bit more. I don't know. Does it stop? I don't think it does. I got sucked up into kind of a cult, a Christian cult that I was a part of. And it's fascinating. I was like teaching the Bible one-on-one to people. And
so hold on. How did this start?
Yeah. So I was living this like hybrid life. And then
what was the hybrid life?
Oh, just still like art, partying, and then like, I'm going to go to church and like explore these things.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I didn't have any guilt about it. I was just like, I felt good. I'm enjoying. No one's really, you know, I'm on my own. And then I went to some like, some art friend was like, come to this like gathering of Christians or something. And I was like, okay, like, we'll see. And then someone there invited me to a different thing. And that's the thing that I got kind of pulled into.
Okay, so if you had to be hyper descriptive of what the thing is.
A church. It was another church.
So you
Christian.
You went out to a meeting of Christians that you were first invited to from someone from your church.
Art. No, from art. Yeah, art world, yeah.
And then you get there, and then somebody there invites you to
their church.
Their church.
And their organization, yeah. Super loving, super warm. Again, another thing that was like transformational for me, I did a lot of interpersonal work. It really was like, look at this passage and then like see how it relates to you and like kind of go deep with yourself. And yeah, that was like 3 years. And then at that point in time, I thought I was going to be like a missionary. I'd gone to Turkey twice and I was like, I'm going to move to Turkey and like do this whole thing. And I was like in it. And then I was in college for 5 years. And so near the end, I started.
I was too. So no shame.
You were?
Yep.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I'm like fucking awesome. I didn't really want to leave. I was like, I love art. And I started realizing that it just didn't feel authentic. Not them per se, but my own experience was, I started realizing that I was doing these like meetings and showing up for things or writing. We would write a lot like every week about the sermon and how it relates to our lives. But I was doing it out of like obligation,
right?
Not out of like a desire to just do it.
And what's interesting is this seems to be a key insight point, because the pattern I've been hearing about what you did since you were an early teenager is you easily fell under what the obligations were of the group that you were in.
Yes.
And then that brought you all the way up to this point, but now you're in your early 20s and you're starting to see, oh, this is a pattern I don't want to keep going.
100%. Yeah. And so then I was also teaching. So after college, I was teaching at high school in a really low income.
What were you teaching?
What was I teaching?
Yeah.
Art. So I ended up teaching art at a high school.
The other pattern that I see is that there's this intense drive in you to want to go help groups that you feel don't have the same access that you have.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I love Black Swan Yoga. Donation based.
It's almost like Jasmine going finding Aladdin.
Yeah. It is like that. Yeah. So I was there, and so I was part of this like cult kind of situation. I was teaching, and I thought teaching art in a high school setting would be like, light me up. And it did.
Because you saw a couple of movies that were really inspiring. Because I know I did. I saw a couple of those movies in the 90s.
My mom was a school teacher too. Yeah. And my sister ended up being a school teacher too. And which is interesting in this. I thought art would be like, oh, this really like engaging, explorative experience. Yeah. And it did not end up like that at all. The kids were amazing, but the administration just sucked the joy and drive out of me like that. And I was just like working long hours. My yoga practice was like on the side.
So you had started yoga?
I started yoga actually right before I was sent away to rehab.
That's a huge
piece.
That's
huge. Yeah. Okay. That was huge. My mom actually was like, so right before I went, she was like trying to intervene. She sent me to like a therapist. And then she like sent me, she was like, let's go to yoga. And that was like in 2007 or something. And yeah, I went to yoga, and that was like, that also was like, ooh, what's this?
Yeah.
So throughout college, I did yoga online because I couldn't afford it.
But you started right before you went to the
40 days.
Did you do it there?
No, I didn't. They didn't have yoga there. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was like percolating.
The seed was planted.
Yeah. The seed was really
planted.
Thanks,
Mom.
Yeah. Thanks, Mom. I know. Right.
So you're teaching.
Yeah, I'm teaching, and I'm in this like cult, and I'm just, all my joy is gone. And I start realizing like.
How old are you right here?
I'm 22, 23, something around then. And I'm just 22. Yeah, I'm just like, oh, I'm not feeling good. I think it was one of the lowest points in my life where I was like.
Was there an acute moment where you really faced, or was it more of like a weekly or monthly thing?
It was like every Sunday night getting ready to go to work.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I dreaded it. I just was like, had so much anxiety about it, and I couldn't wait till Friday. I couldn't wait till the end of every day. And then at the same time, I was having these amazing bonding moments with these students. Mind you, like, I'm so young, and everyone in the school is like African-American, and we got along great, but I would have students telling me these like horrible violent stories of like gun violence. And one of my students' girlfriends was raped on the way to school, and I'm 22 and I'm like, I don't have my shit together. I'm falling apart myself.
Yeah.
And
like, it was how like, how can I help these kids if yeah, I don't feel like I have yeah, my stuff together?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the administration, and then like the demands of like the church that I was a part of, I was like, I got to go. Like, I can't do this anymore. And then
was that an acute moment? Like where you're like, I have.
It was just culminated. Yeah. It was right at the, I was coming to the end of the school year, and I was like,
I see.
I'm done with this. I'm not going to come back. I'm done.
What did you do?
And yeah, it was right at the end, and they were like in finals. And finally I had like, we got out early one day, and I hadn't been moving. I hadn't been doing yoga, and I went for a really long run, and it felt so liberating. And I just remember running in my neighborhood, and I was like, what am I going to do? And so I started thinking about moving. And I was like, I had heard about Austin, and I heard about Denver, and I started just researching the both of them.
Interesting.
I know.
Right.
And then I actually moved down here because there was two couples that were part of the church I was a part of. And they're like, we're moving to Austin to start a church. And I was like, I'm going to go with you guys.
Yeah.
And so I came down here with them. On a whim.
So then what's the, so what age is it that you get here in Austin?
I was like 23.
And your main focus then was to help them start this church?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, yep. And we were all living together, and I was nannying. And then I was teaching art at an art school in Austin. And then I started working at a yoga studio. And then it changed. Everything shifted.
What happened?
And then I just started becoming more and more integrated into the yoga community. And I was more on my own because I was working a ton. And then the first winter we were here, we had a retreat, and we were writing a year-long reflection at this retreat.
For yoga?
No, for the church that I was part
okay,
of.
Okay, cool, cool.
All right. So I was with the church writing this reflection. And then I realized all these things that I'm sharing with you now. And then I was like, in the middle of the writing, after I finished writing, I was like, I got to go. And I just said bye, and I left. And then I moved out within a few weeks.
What did you realize when you did the one-year reflection?
That I had been living those patterns of obligation, and even moving down to Austin with them was, I kind of like snuck in. I think my intentions were well, but it was, my main motive was not like, yeah, let's go do this. Even then, I probably wouldn't have said that. But when I really think about it, it was like a way to leave.
Right.
You know, leave yeah. everything in Chicago, leave that community, that church, the school, like just fresh start. And then I left. No, there was no negativity behind it. There was one moment, and I was just thinking about it the other day. I was on the Greenbelt trail running, and one of the pastors who's a friend said something along the lines of like
a text.
No. This was in person.
I see. But you just remembered it when you
yeah,
were
just, yeah. Just, I bring it, it brings it back to my mind quite a bit. I was talking about like how I feel really connected to God when I'm outside in nature, and that I love being in the green belt and hiking and running. And he said something like, I think that's an excuse for you to say that you're feeling connected to God. And it just didn't settle well with me. And at that point, I think that was right after the retreat or shortly after. And then I realized my worldview was different, and that there was nothing like I had any malice towards them. It was just like, I'm feeling really connected to my yoga community, and everything seems more integrated than I had thought it was before.
Yeah. A thing that I would offer, and this is based off of pretty good scientific literature, but if something from your past keeps popping up into your conscious mind, it's almost like it's your unconscious telling you, sort this out. It's not sorted. And what it sounds like is you still need to create a proper rebuttal to what he said. You know, because you know that you don't agree with it, but it's almost like you still have to construct an argument for yourself to have to explain to him, even if you don't ever actually talk to him again, but like writing a letter or something that explains like, I don't agree with you and here's why. And like a thing that comes up in me is anyone who's talking about spirituality who claims that you can't have a direct relationship to that thing and that you have to be a part of any organization or you have to be under any one human, I think that that's a fundamental lie. And I think that it's a lie that the ego tells to have power. And so
I think that's what it felt like.
Right. And so I think that you're exactly spot on with being like, I love you, but fuck you.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. I've been thinking about like my reasoning behind it. And I think it's, I've had conversations before where it's like the idea of you can't take away someone's experience, right? Their experience is their experience, and that experience becomes their truth. And now, you know, I'm like, it was that same feeling of feeling boxed in. It was like, how can you tell me what my relationship with with God or heart, you know, universe feels like to me is going to be different for you. And maybe you don't have that same connection.
Right. I think everyone has that potential, but not a lot of people
are able to open up to that.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like maybe, you know, there is a lot of research about the benefits of being outside. But I think it's just more of an experience. I light myself up when I'm out there. I'm like, whoa, a spider, a spider's web, like trees, like sunlight flickering through the leaves. Like that's magical.
Yeah.
You know, and that's to me is profound. So yes, I will do that.
For sure. So you left the church.
Yep.
And then what did you do?
I solely went into the yoga world pretty quickly. I finished during that whole time when I was in the church, I was also taking a teacher training.
So at Black Swan?
No, at another studio in town. And I actually met my ex there in teacher training.
What age?
I was 24 at this point in time.
Was the relationship with your ex your first kind of primary emotional relationship?
Yeah, it was pretty significant.
Like,
yeah,
where it was like, oh, I'm in love.
Yeah, totally. And then I moved in with a girlfriend, and then within like 3, 4, 5 months, we moved into each other. Great.
It's funny that you slipped and said into each other.
We moved into each other. Yep. We did move into each other.
That's what people tend to do in a relationship.
happens. Yeah. Yeah, and it was lovely. It was amazing. And that lasted almost 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So since then, you've been consistent with the yoga community.
Yep.
And
more and more every day.
What was the primary dream or goal that existed in those 5 years where you found yoga and you found your partner?
Yeah.
What was the story of who you were and what was the story of where you were trying to go?
Yeah. I just wanted to make it work. And I remember-
What does that mean?
I didn't know. This is the same pattern. I didn't really know. It was just this like feeling, I need to teach yoga. And then before I know it, I'm teaching a little bit more and a little bit more. And there was times where I was like, can I make this like really work financially? Am I gonna really support myself? And my partner was like, you got it. Just go, just do it. And I'm so thankful. I remember him saying specifically, we were on a walk one day years ago, and he said, you're going to look back in just even a year or two, and you're going to say, man, I'm so fucking busy with yoga work, with this work. And I was like, sure, we'll see. And here I am, and it is that, and it's amazing. So I didn't really know. I just wanted to teach. And then all of a sudden, I think following that dharma, that like calling, it was just, I was like, I'm going to stick to it. I started teaching kids yoga. I started teaching senior yoga and like restorative yoga and breath work and doing gong baths. And then before I know it, I'm teaching teacher training, which is like, that was the dream actually. when I first went to my 200-hour teacher training program, my teacher was in the front of the room and I was just like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to be that.
And look at where you're going.
I know.
You're going to Denver to open up a Black Swan yoga studio.
Yeah. Like it really feels like a manifestation.
And on some levels, it's its own church, but it's a church that helps people connect to their experience.
Their own experience.
Right. Which I think is, there is clearly, for people who have the eyes to see, there is a spiritual dimension to existence.
Yes.
And I don't think it's dependent on anything outside of the individual.
Yeah.
And any practice that helps people connect to that part of them is sacred, you know?
100%. You're right. It's literally all those things. And it's just like, oh man, it feels so fucking good.
Yeah, and it's like you had to go through all those quote unquote churches to see the ways that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know? And then it lights the ways for the way that it will work.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What story is your favorite story right now? So like either what's your favorite movie or your favorite book?
Oh, my favorite book, The Woman Who Ran with the Wolves. I'm blanking on the author. It is basically all these myths and stories of different cultures of women. And
I've got to read this book.
You've got to read it. You're going to love it. And every woman should read this book. Every man should read it to understand the woman. And it's helped me understand myself and my past so much. And it's basically helping, she like psychoanalyzes these stories and really picks them apart to like every detail, like symbolism and everything.
I love that.
It's so deep.
Yeah.
And it's been so profound for me. It has literally, I started reading it right after I parted ways with my ex. And it literally helped me find my own power and my own voice. And like, it's all about finding your own wild woman.
This is a really interesting point. After my first major relationship ended, that's when I found the book, The Artist's Way.
Oh, I've heard of this book.
That book helped me find my voice.
Huh.
And it truly changed the way that I saw myself, the way that I saw what art was, and then the way that I saw what God was.
Huh.
And it's interesting how if you're open to it, when your deepest relationship ends, it's almost like that's your invitation to go deeper within who you actually are.
Oh yeah. And when I went really deep.
Yeah.
I mean, those first few weeks were like, I would say the hardest point in my entire life.
For sure.
It was really hard. And then I emerged as like I died. I felt like I literally was death. And then I'm like, holy shit, this is me. Like I feel like a new person.
I'm interested. If you had to try to tell the story of the book that you're reading to a smart 10-year-old, I know it's not written in a way where it's one story.
Yeah, it's hard.
But if you had 3 minutes before the 10-year-old was going to fall asleep at night and you wanted to impart the essence of the book that you're reading as a story to her, let's imagine it's a smart 10-year-old girl. How would you tell that story?
To a 10-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about my 10-year-old self, I would say, babe, this is an amazing book about various
women. I'm going to stop you quick.
Yeah.
Don't describe the book.
Okay.
To her.
Oh, it's so hard because there's so many different stories in it.
Just go with the first one that comes up
and
tell her a story.
Mm.
So like once upon a time.
Okay. Let me think. All right. All right. Once upon a time, there was a mother duck and she laid eggs. She was sitting on her eggs and she noticed one of the eggs looked a little different. And she still kept nurturing it just like the other eggs. And then all of a sudden, one morning, all the eggs hatch and all the birds, their baby ducks, look all the same except one. It looks really different and odd. And the mother duck is perplexed but still embraces her child. And then before you know it, other mother ducks come by and start kind of giving the mom a hard time about her odd looking child, and the mom becomes really confused with how to raise this child and starts seeing all the other ducklings criticize the odd one. And eventually the odd duck feels ostracized and confuses who she is. And so she starts swimming around to other parts of the pond and meets a chicken and a stray cat. And they start ostracizing her because she doesn't swim like the other ducks. They don't really know how she acts and who she is. And so she doesn't feel fit. She doesn't fit in. She's not part of the barnyard. And she keeps swimming. She sees the ducks all hanging out together. And then days and days go by, and all of a sudden she's by herself and she looks up and she sees other birds that look just like her. And so she swims over to the birds, and they're bright-eyed, bushy-tailed for her. And they welcome her with their wings, and she finds her tribe. And then in that moment, she realizes who she really is.
And do you see that that's your story?
Yeah, kind of.
That's fucking beautiful. And to end the podcast, I like to ask people a word association section. Both of our eyes got some dust in them.
Yeah.
So give us a moment. But I'm going to ask you a couple of, I'm just going to say either a word or a phrase, and you just say the first thing that pops up.
Okay.
Word or phrase that captures your life philosophy.
Life is unpredictable.
Word or phrase that cuts to the core of who you are.
You have one life.
What are you most afraid of?
Ooh. I was meditating on that today. I really have been letting go of all fear. I don't have anything right now.
What is your most persistent problem?
There's not enough time.
Street smart or analytic?
Street smart.
Slow or fast-paced environments?
Fast.
Are you a rule follower or a risk taker?
Risk taker.
Is your need for control low, medium, or high?
Medium.
Are you more intellectually or physically competitive?
Physically.
Are you more critical of yourself or of others?
Myself.
Fast or slow choices?
Fast.
Pressure comes from?
Pressure comes from myself.
And what does pressure feel like in the body?
A little bit of anxiety.
In my tribe, which resonates the most? Queen, warrior, magician, or lover?
Warrior.
It all comes down to?
Love.
Success is?
Following your dharma.
Love is?
Everything.
My vision.
Sending out loving kindness.
I am.
I am.
My purpose.
To serve.
The most defining moment of my life.
There's been so many. I would say my separation.
This is the last question. Let's say that you've lived as long as you wanted to and you've accomplished everything that you wanted to. You know that you're going to die in 24 hours. Mm-hmm. How do you spend that last day and who do you spend it with?
I would spend it with myself, definitely. Not the whole time. I think in the beginning I would spend it with my loved ones, family, friends, coworkers, my tribe, connecting. But I would want to spend time outside.
With God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the very last question is, if you could leave a note to your children and your grandchildren, what would you write on that note on that last day?
I would say, my motto. Life is unpredictable, but follow your heart, follow your inner truth, and know that you have all of life's inner potential within you. And then I would end it and say, you are the point the universe is trying to make.
Wow, I've never heard that, and I fucking love that.
Right.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much. I feel so good. You're amazing.
Namasteezy.
Namasteezy.